Welcome to the podcast, Winning Through Culture, where we're helping entrepreneurs stay impactful and relevant. I'm your host, Tim Flanagan.
Welcome back to Winning Through Culture. I am excited today to be here with Jared Engel, and we're going to give Jared a proper introduction, but I am also absolutely thrilled. It was a year ago today that was the last time we were live in our podcast studio. So 1 year later, which blows my mind, we are sitting here live in our podcast studio in Charlotte, North Carolina. Don't know where a year went, but it has gone past us quickly. As way of introduction and tying back into the idea of building winning cultures, one of our previous guests, Tom Shea, back in 2020, and I spoke a lot about the creation of culture. And specifically, one of the things that Tom and I spoke about now over 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, was how could we utilize some of what he had learned in the United States Navy SEALs in training some of the most elite people in the Special Forces community, if not the most elite people in the Special Forces community. How could we take the training methodologies that were used in the SEAL community and bring that into the business community? And so the genesis of that turned into a series of several conversations with Tom and a core group of our team that actually was affectionately named Project Pineapple to create what we now refer to as our ADP program, Advisor Development Program. So once the program was built, our intent was to really transform the culture of the organization by helping our advisors transform their knowledge, skills, and abilities to better serve their clients. We needed someone to lead this endeavor. And I looked at it, remember when we had the finished product, and I looked at it and said, there's absolutely no way we can piecemeal this thing through the organization. We need a leader. Enter Jarrett. Jarrett and I knew each other from a past life, and I'll let him talk a little bit about that, but he ultimately was running a field leadership development program, and I knew he had both the passion and the skill sets and the ability to execute on the vision and the roadmap we had created for advisor development. So in a moment, I'm going to have Jarrett introduce himself. Today, we're going to talk about how that program was launched, what are some of the tenets of that program, and how that ultimately is influencing and affecting the culture of our organization in a positive way, and more importantly, how some of those things that we've put in place are highly transferable to other organizations that truly want to invest in their people, which is an investment in their culture. So with all that said, Jarrett, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here as a guest on Winning Through Culture. Why don't you just take a minute to add a little bit more both to your background and what actually ultimately caused you to decide this was a role you wanted to pursue.
Sure, absolutely, Tim. And I'm humbled and thank you so much for having me here today. I've been now with the firm for a little over a year and a half. And so thinking about today's time with you really allowed me to reflect on the past year and a half. And quite honestly, my nearly 25 years of experience, you know, in our industry. And I was introduced at a session just a few weeks ago as coming from the home office. And I corrected the presenter and said, well, I'm actually returning to the field. And so I had my start as an advisor and then a sales manager. And then I transitioned into the home office and spent nearly 15 years there in a variety of different roles. But what I learned throughout all those different roles, whether they were in marketing, communications, training, regional roles, was the importance of culture. And quite honestly, I mentioned to candidates looking to join our firm that culture really is everything. And so I reached a point in my career where I was looking to take the experience that I had and bring it to a position where not only I could benefit, but others can benefit from it as well. And so it just made the most sense to take advantage of the opportunity that you presented to me and join the firm, and which not only gave me the opportunity to work with advisors in their development, but also with managers as well. And as you know, start a management development program at the firm, which is now in full swing.
Yeah, so you know, again, you have took the idea, which was on paper, and brought it to life. You know, what are, as you think about the work that you've done to evolve the development of not only advisors, but leaders in the organization, maybe touch on the difference between training and development. Because again, a lot of people use the word training, you know, we got to train our people, we got to train them on this.
Sure.
You've expounded upon that. There is a difference. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the differences and how they've been employed to, again, have a positive effect on the culture of the organization.
Sure. No, absolutely. Whether it was my time working with the wholesaling organization at the home office, or facilitating and working with coaches to train, whether it be field advisors or managers. What I learned early on is to avoid the shiny objects. And sometimes trainers tend to have push conversations with mm-hmm. their audience rather than pull conversations. And one of the opportunities that the firm had that I really gravitated towards was a culture of coaching and taking on the coaching mindset. So since it was already in place at the firm, I knew that it was going to be a very easy transition for me, because training is really designed to be in the short term. Mm-hmm. And when we have conversations with candidates, we often tell them that we don't hire to a role. We hire to the person. And in order to do that, you have to create a development plan. Training is for the short term. I see development as a long-term play. It involves looking and trying to figure out where the advisor wants to be, not just a year from now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And a big part of development is being a coach and coaching to that. Because if you're not doing that, then most likely you're having push conversations with people rather than pull conversations. And those push conversations tend to be very short-lived. It's been determined that most people really only retain 3-5% from any session that they've been in. And that's why at the firm, and you had mentioned building out a program, we took that program and we went into a lot of different directions with our existing staff. So rather than just bringing people into the organization, and I like to say having presenters get out in front of them and you know, folks are just eating popcorn and watching, we try to make it as interactive as possible.
So push versus pull. Jared, if you could, for a minute, break that down. I mean, I think you obviously intuitively know what you're talking about, but what does it mean to push from a training or development perspective versus pull?
Sure. No, that's a great question, Tim. You know, I found that oftentimes presenters will get up in front of an audience mm-hmm. and they'll wave the shiny objects and they'll try mm-hmm. to bring people in that way. But then they just push out information and folks take notes. And then usually at the end, they have a Q&A. And at most firms, what I found nationally is they bring in presenters or they bring in people from the home office to present on a variety of different topics. And that's great from a knowledge perspective, but not necessarily from a skill one. So what we've tried to do is create an environment for our advisors where they're entering sessions and they're being asked to perform. They're being asked questions. They're being brought into the conversation or pulled into the conversation rather than having information just pushed out to them.
Got it. Okay. So it's a more engaging process instead of just telling people. You're engaging them and bringing them into their own development. I mean, what do you see or what have you seen that pull effect have on both the individual that's being developed and the greater culture of the organization that they're a part of?
A variety of different things happen. One, you engage the entire firm. So for example, the resources that we have in place, which is so great to the culture. So we have experts in marketing, we have experts in supervision, we have experts in product, in wealth management, and financial planning. And we bring those individuals into the sessions, not necessarily just to dump their bucket, so to speak, where folks will just sit back, eat popcorn, and listen to what they have to say. But they'll challenge them, whether that be through case study analysis, whether that be through practicing language and role plays. We do that with our senior advisors as well. So we try to engage not just the resources at the firm, but also the resources in our senior advisors. And we bring our senior advisors into study groups, and they share with them their process, and they engage them in language. In fact, a byproduct of that is we often see joint field work come out of that, and partnerships are created. Succession planning can be created from that. So, you know, a session isn't necessarily designed for knowledge for the sake of knowledge, mm-hmm. but also to practice skills, but most importantly, to create communication opportunities and bring the firm together.
So you're really focusing the efforts, not just again on knowledge transference, but and these are my words. You can correct me if you see fit. That's totally okay. Is almost creating a community of learning.
Absolutely. And look, and it's also knowing what the success factors are. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had a senior advisor, a successful advisor, get up on the podium and say, "I'd like to thank myself." They always thank the people around them. They thank their study groups. They thank their mentors. They thank their proteges. They thank their managers. They thank their family. They thank their friends. They thank their colleagues. And so what we've attempted to do with the program, the advisor development program that you mentioned, is create that environment. So create an environment where advisors and managers have the opportunity to be a part of those study groups. They have the opportunity to be a part of those role play sessions. And rather than learning from me per se, or learning from a speaker that we bring in, more importantly, they're learning from each other. Mm-hmm. And to what you just said, they're creating a community of learning.
Okay, so that the cultural implications of that are you are capturing the collective wisdom of the group and passing it down generationally, maybe a bit of a stretch from a chronological age, but you're passing it down from the master to the apprentice.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be honest with you, Tim, one of the reasons why I joined the firm is you made it very easy for me from the perspective that foundationally you had two great opportunities. Number one, you had a culture in place, mm-hmm. which is super important. So building a curriculum off that culture and off of our five core values was huge. And number two, you have senior advisors, successful senior advisors that we could bring in to the training program that were not only just adding value, but culturally had the desire to give back. And to not just be go-getters, but go-givers and give mm-hmm. back to the community that you've built.
Well, that's, yes, and we are blessed in that regard for sure. Switching gears a little bit and thinking about motivation and understanding motivations, how does that play into harnessing, again, the collective power of the group to teach one another, but importantly, I guess, a newer person coming into the culture, how do you see understanding who they are and their motivations and then tapping and channeling that into the broader context of their development? How do you see that unfold?
Sure. Well, it starts in the candidate process. You know, oftentimes I have conversations with our candidates about what is their why? You know, why do they want to be here? And oftentimes I find a very left brain analytic response. Mm-hmm. They want to help others, which is fine.
Yep.
But they don't tap into the right brain or the emotional response, the storytelling response. And that's where trust comes from. And so we start to have those conversations very early on in the candidate process. But we also learn about, again, I mentioned this earlier, but where do they see themselves a year from now, five mm-hmm. years from now, 10 years from now? When they think about their markets, what do those markets think of them? You know, what is their personal brand? You know, what is their story? And starting to build on that and work on that. And we've created an environment where they can learn other people's whys and other people's stories and grow and evolve in that direction.
If you think back in the time that you've been in this role, and not necessarily calling out specific people by name, but I mean, how have you seen that unfold in people's lives, this idea of, again, capturing their motivation and helping them clarify their why?
Sure. In fact, you know, a byproduct, completely unintentional, is we have a study group every Friday with our new advisors. And the senior advisors are invited to come in as hosts. And oftentimes to our prep calls, I'll ask our senior advisors to explain their why. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they haven't talked about it in decades. And maybe they had some of those basic skills. And if mm-hmm. I had a dollar for every time a senior advisor said to me on a debrief, I really need to take my own advice, you know, and that, and so we're not just helping our junior advisors, but we're helping our senior advisors as well, because sometimes getting back to the basics can really take their career from one place to another without necessarily having to really change anything. So although the focus of the advisor development program, it encapsulates the entire firm, but it's specific to new advisors, we're seeing that it's also having a very significant impact on the senior ones as well.
So I want to come back to something you said. I want to stick with why for a little bit, because again, a lot of people have heard of Simon Sinek or read his book, you know, Start With Why. Expound on the why that you're looking for in your conversations, whether it's a, you know, somebody that's been in this profession for a long time and has kind of lost track of that, or somebody that's new, because it's a little bit different, I think, than what Simon Sinek talks about.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'd like to use myself as an example, if that's okay.
That's perfectly fine and probably appropriate. So go ahead.
So when I started out in the career, and you know this, but and most of our advisors do, because I do tell this story, but I'm a med school dropout, and my wife continued on with medical school. And because of what I had learned at medical school, I was very comfortable approaching clients and mentioning that I was going to diagnose their financial, you know, the situation, and then come up with solutions as a physician would, and give them treatments. And that, to me, from a mindset perspective, it worked very well. I felt very comfortable that way. Probably wasn't the best approach, knowing what I know now. And it was no surprise that I did my leaders conference in the first year, but in the second year I hit a brick wall. And I wasn't exactly sure why, but I was getting a lot of no's and I was getting a lot of rejection from my prospects. And I took a trip over the summer to visit with my mother-in-law, and we went to Tennessee, and we were sitting on the porch one day and drinking lemonade, and she knew I was struggling, and Jennifer, my wife, must have told her. And so Brenda looked at me, it was just the two of us, and said, you know, if it wasn't for life insurance, you never would have met Jennifer. I said, really? I said, well, what do you mean? And she's like, well, Jennifer may or may not know this, but when she was 10 years old and Robert, her brother, was 9, an insurance agent approached Hayes, her husband, and wanted him to buy some life insurance. And Hayes, being an analytic, kept looking into the features. The agent was really just talking about the cash value features. Hayes wasn't interested. And then one day at church, he approached Hayes again, but this time in front of Brenda and the children, and said, Hayes, if you're not going to do it, you know, for yourself, at least do it for your kids. Now, I don't know if I agree with that approach, but that was the approach he took. And Brenda asked Hayes why he hadn't bought life insurance, and she asked him to buy it. So he did. And about a year later, he was diagnosed with inoperable cancer, and he passed away. And it was very sudden, and Brenda was left without a husband, and Jennifer and Robert were left without a father. And I didn't know that story, but what happened was that life insurance policy paid for them to go to private school and have after-school care at the private school. And they went to one of the best private schools in Nashville, and that got them into a good college, and that's where I met Jennifer. So Brenda was right. If it wasn't for life insurance, Jennifer and I never would have met. But on the short 14-hour drive back to New Jersey, where I'm originally from, I got to think about that. And I realized that the reason I was getting those no's is because I was having a very left-brain analytical conversation with my clients. And what I really needed to do was tap into my right brain, that area where trust comes from. I didn't have to tell my clients that story. I just had to know that story to tap into that side of my brain and realize that I needed to start advocating on behalf of the people that weren't at the table and not just talk about features and benefits or riders, but really talk about what happens should the unthinkable happen? And someone asked me what I did for a living towards the end of that year, and my answer to them was, I turned no's into yeses, because that's what I did. I went back to those clients, and I repositioned my language, and I ended up doing not only leaders, but MDRT that year. And that's how I found my why. And that why changes, it evolves.
Yep.
And so whether it was being a sales manager during 9/11 in Manhattan, or clients who I had set up life insurance policies for who had passed away, the death claims that I had delivered, all of those changed my why. And I don't necessarily share those stories with clients, but I use those stories as a mental exercise before getting ready to go on my appointments and remind myself how honorable this profession is and all the good that we do and that we deliver to our clients.
And why you do what you do.
And why I do what I do.
And how that's made you who you are.
That is true.
Well, that's a great story. And I think just listening to it, you know, is a good reflection of, you know, what you spoke about relative to helping people tap into their why. Because, again, I think Simon Sinek did great work. At the same time, it's not so much about the life side of things. And what gets us to get up every day and do what we do in spite of whatever challenges may be facing us that day or that week or that year. We do it because there's a bigger why. There's a bigger purpose to it all. So thank you for sharing that. I do want to go back to something you said specifically around fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the fact that as some of the more senior people in the organization are getting involved in the development of some of the newer advisors, it's a reminder to go back to the fundamentals of success and of what it takes to be successful in this profession. Talk a little bit more about, you know, the place of fundamentals in the advisor development program, and ultimately how does that play into foundationally the fundamentals of a great culture?
Sure. No, absolutely. Well, I think at its core is understanding some basic skills around language.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we employ in one of the, you know, one of the language opportunity that you brought through the firm through Mission Driven Advisor is really one of those fundamentals. Language is thought. You know, the Eskimos have 20 or so different, you know, meanings for the word snow. And so through Mission Driven Advisor, our advisors understand, our managers understand that when speaking with our advisors, they're not going to ask the question, you know, how many appointments did you have this week? Instead, they'll say, how many people did you invite into your practice? And that changes mindset. It's how we look at things. It's how we learn. It's how we grow. And it's how we, you know, work with our clients. Because, again, it's a cascade effect. You know, it starts here at the office. It starts here in those sessions. But then eventually, it ends up going out to our clients. And so we're very careful with language. And then, of course, role-playing that language. I mean, practicing language with one another and doing it in an experiential format is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've learned that we're not all intellectual learners. We can't be just given a script and said, okay, here, go memorize this and try it out. We're experiential learners. We like to experience things, especially in this profession. So we create that environment for you to experience language.
Mm-hmm.
And we have fun with it. You know, we have fun with it and we throw each other objections and we also have different disciplines, you know. So, for example, we have some role plays that are more financial planning focused for those advisors that want to approach, you know, the business from that direction. We also have a pro growth language group for some of our female advisors that want to talk about language in that way. And we also go beyond just the practicing of language through case study analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So every month we pick a particular case, and as a team, we break out into different groups, and we really inspect the case. And as a team, we learn from one another on how we would handle client's information, and then how we would then go back to the client with a diagnosis, if you will, of cool. that information. And that happens on a monthly basis. We also know the importance of keeping score. Foundationally, even our senior advisors, they practice their language, they review their case studies, but they keep score. And so we look at those different levels of accountability on, and it's not just being held accountable by, let's say, your manager. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of those areas that's definitely part of a training program, but not a development one, where we look to find out, well, where do you see yourself, a year from now, and how are you going to get there from an accountability perspective? So each week, our advisors get together, and we have multiple groups going on Fridays, and they get together and they talk about their week, and they hold each other accountable, and they discuss their commitments from last week into this week, and how those commitments are going to change moving forward. And I like to call that leadership learning. Well, we're all learning and leading each other rather than having a manager hold you accountable, you know, on a weekly basis, and then having that conversation with them. But it's really group learning versus individual learning, which again is more of a development, getting back to an original question, an aspect of development versus training.
So it's really a peer-to-peer accountability, which is expounded on as getting them to make commitments and honor their word.
Absolutely. And we do it in a format that, you know, I mentioned to you, a couple of years at med school, but what I did learn is the philosophy of see one, do one, teach one. Mm-hmm. And in medical school, especially among residents, it's important that they teach one another, because you don't really know something, you know, this is something I learned from my father, but until you own it.
Yep.
You know, it's one thing to know it, but you got to own it. And you have to memorize it, but you have to practice it, and you have to teach others. And that's what we do in these various different sessions. So we might be, you know, holding each other accountable at one of these accountability sessions, you know, our client builder each week, but we give each other the opportunity to teach one another how to do what they're suggesting. So it's not just about telling, it's also about teaching.
Showing.
Mm-hmm. And showing, correct.
Okay. Now, thinking again through the lens of culture, what are, if any, what are some other elements of the work you've been doing over the last year and a half, the way things are structured, that have helped elevate not only the culture of the organization, but the people in it?
Sure. Well, you know, if you just look at our, the five core values of our culture, mm-hmm. and one of those key elements is stewardship. And, important to my life, and you know this very well, is being able to be involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And many of our advisors, especially with the struggles through the pandemic this past year, have had some challenges in that regard, being a part of the community, being part of some of the volunteer work that they do. But have found different ways and different outlets for doing it. Personally, I was involved in an organization called Classroom Central, mm-hmm. where we were stuffing backpacks for children, getting ready to go to school. And it got put on the side a little bit, and we're going to continue to do that. But in its absence, I was able to become a member of the advisory board for our Union County Boys and Girls Club. And we encourage all of our advisors and managers to take part in that core value, but some of the others as well, like balance and having a balanced life. Working from home is challenging. It's very difficult. It can become very monotonous for others, going from one client Zoom call to another.
Zoom land.
Right. Can be extremely tedious and difficult. But my belief is that looking at the core values that you've put in place in the firm has really given us the opportunity to get out of the mundane that sometimes the pandemic has caused, and really think about, are we doing enough to have a balanced life? Are we doing enough to give back and to be a part of something else bigger than ourselves? You know, and are we growing? You know, one of the commitments that we all made at the start of the pandemic was that we were not just going to get through it, mm-hmm. but we were going to grow through it. And I think that's how we were able to have the success that we had. And we wanted to make sure that that core value was not put on its side, and look at each one, and make sure that we're doing everything we can to touch on each of our five core values.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder, because I remember, almost a year ago now, us deciding, we're not going to just try and survive this. We're going to try and grow through this. Mm-hmm. And that's a good reminder. It's easy to be in the present moment looking forward and not necessarily reflect backwards as to where you've come from. So, well, as a wrap up, I mean, again, I appreciate your time with us today, and certainly more than that, appreciate who you are and what you've meant to the organization now for a year and a half. You know, again, we talked about the fact that you have to create a winning culture, got to invest in people, and not just by lip service, but by action. And that investment is really in helping them uncover their purpose, giving them a roadmap for success, not just telling them information and teaching them, you know, here's what you need to know, but experientially bringing them in to learn not only from you and the faculty, if you will, the experts, but to learn from them, their peers that may be at the same level they are at, and their peers that are much more advanced in their skills. And that's a very important experiential learning component. And then ultimately, again, leaning into having a clear set of values tied back to the purpose of why you're doing what you do. That has all kind of come together in a very nice soup, if you will, to create a winning culture that is helping people not only survive, but really grow and thrive. So thank you for the contributions you're making there and the impact that that is having. Again, not only on our advisors and their families, but the greater community that they serve, because we clearly know that now, probably more than ever, people are looking for, they're concerned about their health and well-being, they're concerned about their financial situation, they're looking for quality advice, they're looking for trust, another topic we discussed today, and someone to guide them along the way to give some sense of security and some sense of normalcy, if you will, for a secure financial future and a secure life. So thank you for the work you're doing. It makes a difference. So I am Tim Flanagan again, finishing up here with Jared Engel, Winning Through Culture. It was great to have you with us today, and we look forward to having you join us at our next episode. I've enjoyed spending time with you on this episode today, and be sure to continue along this winning journey with me. Thank you for listening to the Winning Through Culture podcast, and remember, stay impactful and relevant. To connect with us, you can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Winning Through Culture, and find us online at winningthroughculture.com, or just go to the show notes where you'll find all the links. We look forward to connecting with you and hearing from you. Thanks for listening.